Welcome, folks, to the Slowpokes podcast. As always, I am Slowpoke number two, David Chalante.
And I'm Slowpoke number one, John Nicolaitis.
If you've noticed from my intro, that John has noticeably more energy than me because I am injured.
Yes.
I have a pulled muscle scenario.
Mm-hmm. And we won't make fun of you for it.
No, thank you. I appreciate that.
Not at all.
Never. Not even for a moment. I am annoyed because of that, and I have to sit in very specific positions. Yep. And you may notice that my patience and my energy and my general enthusiasm is a little bit lower.
Yes, and I've also forced David to do some new movements and things to hopefully make the podcast sound better. So
there could not be a worse day for it. So I thank you for that, John.
Anytime, David.
Yeah, but we are trying out some new microphone positioning as well, if that didn't make sense to you on the surface there, listener. Also today, a little bit different in shape is our actual episode today.
It's a double episode.
Another double episode. We've done them in the past. I think this marks our third double episode or second.
I should know. I think it's the second.
Okay, but we'll say the second. The second double episode. So in reality, the fourth episode.
Yes, because it was Pony Island and Super Hot that we did.
Yeah. Which is a very, very fun episode. Today we're doing two games: Shower with Your Dad Simulator 2015.
Do you still shower with your dad?
Thank you for that. I lost my place.
No, you got there in the end. We're a team.
And another game, equally difficult to remember, is Duskers.
Duskers is difficult to remember?
It was a joke that there's a single word that's much easier to say than the 19 and a half words that are in Shower with Your Dad Simulator 2015. Do you still shower with your dad?
Oh, I get how you constructed that joke now.
Yeah, there's a shape of it.
Okay.
You see it?
Yep.
All right, so we're going to be starting with Shower with Your Dad. Both of these games are relatively small indie games.
Yeah,
Shower with Your Dad, blah, 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 is a self-published game by Ma Ben X, I think is how that's pronounced.
Ma Benks. Classic internet handle that has now become your name on the internet. It's like almost near unpronounceable because it was always meant to be read and never spoken.
That one came out in September of 2015. And the other game, Duskers, is by Misfits Attic, came out in May 2016. Now, Duskers was a game that I suggested, and Shower With Your Dad was a game that you suggested.
Yes.
I think we'll start off with Shower With Your Dad. And John, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about what you expected from this game, and for the what I imagine is a large portion of them that haven't actually, you know, really dug into it, what the game sort of is on the surface.
So I've spent many years pondering the question, who remembers showering with your father and what that meant to you? And I was looking for a grand epic tale to really go into this pseudo father-son relationship and explore it in detail. This game is not that. this is basically a collection of very short mini games surrounded by puns wrapped up in memes that it's just really simple games wrapped up in dad jokes.
Yeah. So Shower With Your Dad 2015 Simulator, Do You Still Shower With Your Dad?
Perfect.
Is one of these games that kind of came out of nowhere and then everybody started talking about it all at once. It is basically a meme, I guess. Not really. Like, not really in what the actual meaning of the word meme is.
So I think it's really interesting as like a cultural artifact and kind of icon. That's the reason why I wanted us to play it, is it doesn't really fit into our sort of either triple A or traditional indie. It's almost like a flash game kind of experience.
Yeah, it's definitely on that level.
Yeah, you would like... It reminds me very much of Frog Fractions, which is actually, I'm pretty sure, a free Flash game that you can find that is very zany, and the internet kind of fell in love with it. And there was many years of speculation that this was actually going to be Frog Fractions 2, but it's not.
Yeah, so Frog Fractions is a game that I've not played, but it's always mentioned in relation to this. And from what I understand from Frog Fractions, it presents itself as a really generic kind of
maths game.
But then the longer you play it, weird stuff starts to happen and it becomes very kind of off the wall and non sequitur.
All the maths is wrong and terrible.
Oh, okay.
And
I didn't know that.
Not really doing fractions. And then things appear in the store like hyper tongue and lets you do all these things super fast. And then you get arrested by the police and then you go into time jail. So it's very zany.
Yeah, right? and it's very unexpected. So Shower With Your Dad was billed... This, like I said, this game came out in September 2015. We were only playing it now in early 2018. So I was expecting quite a lot from this game based on the way people described it, because it's like, you know, this is what it looks like, but it's so much more than that. Then I played it. I think it's important to say that this game did only cost a dollar of money.
Then I think this is something to reiterate.
Point is, like, you know, you pay a dollar for it, and so it's really inexpensive regardless of how you consider that to be money or not. My expectation was that this thing was going to be so big. Like, a phrase that people kept using was, it really opens up and it really defies your expectations and it changes into something totally different. And then I actually played it, and it honestly, you've got the surface level crappy games where you've got the premise of the game is that you're a young boy, probably like three or four years old.
Yes, that's correct.
And you're in like a public shower and you have to find your dad.
Yes, and there are different mini games about finding your dad, whether it's continuously finding your dad or you becoming different boys and finding your dad. Like, it's just very silly kind of match games.
Yeah, it's very, very fast. And yeah. So the sensation of actually playing it is not actually unpleasant, right? Yeah. It functions very well as a game I would play for 5 minutes and go, that's kind of silly.
Yeah, if you've played any game that exists inside of a loading screen or was free on a Flash website, you've played some iteration of
this game. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. What my realization was, though, when I actually started playing this game, is that when people talk about it opening up, they basically just kind of mean there's more of that. So it's silly, and, you know, every dad is drawn in a silly way, and you can see their dongs and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, in the options menu, which is probably my favorite feature of the game, it has like nudity, and you have a selector, and all the selectors are yes.
Yeah.
No matter what you press.
Yes, yeah, yes. True, hell yes. And stuff like that is very funny. And so we get to this, the idea of this game. I think that if I'd played it for 5 minutes and walked away, I would have fucking loved the hell out of it, right? But the fact that it's as long as it is means that the comedy that it presents very, very well is way too far apart, and I wasn't really able to grab it.
Yeah. When I pitched it, I hadn't really played the whole way through, so I was kind of I was like, oh, I'm just about to be at the point.
So you played this before you suggested it, did
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, this is one of the ones that I played that you didn't know.
No, so I knew that you suggested it for the list. I didn't realize that you'd actually had time with it first.
Surprise! I did. It was still within the realms of the premise, so we're okay, because you're new to it completely. But I was like, oh yeah, I'm right on the cusp of unlocking all of the extras, because this is a very large file for such a simple game. And from all I can tell, there's just like a couple more stages.
Yeah.
And they're very different from the original ones. And maybe it's in contrast with that, with the original games that you get access to, the difference feels larger than it is. Because the games you get when you boot up the game and start it for the first time are very basic. But the ones that you unlock are only slightly more complex.
Yeah, and the reason I bring this up is because you mentioned the options menu. So I booted this game up, I took a look at a couple of the games, and then I went to the options menu, and I laughed out loud at some of the stuff that was written there.
Yeah, same.
Because it was effortless to get that humor, right? So you've mentioned the thing about the nudity setting. One of the ones that actually made me laugh out loud is there's a field of view slider.
Oh, yes, yes.
And it starts at the bottom end at 90, and then you can grab it and drag it to the other end, and in the last, like, 2 pixels, it goes from 90 to 90.1, and I thought that was fucking hilarious.
Yes. Yeah, I'm kind of worried that all of the best jokes are inside of the options menu.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? So anytime I saw a joke that was based on the written word, like, it was, you know, it was like a pun that was written down, mm-hmm. or listing in the options menu, or like the end screen for one of the games if you managed to get through it, those were funny. The actual premise of the game being, it's kind of silly, you're nude, you're showering with your dad, you got to find your dad, you got to match your dad's. Again, there's something a bit funny about that, but that joke lands before you ever touch the game. Like,
Dirk lands when you hear the name.
Yeah, the title is that joke.
Like, shower with your dad, Simulator 2015, do you still shower with your dad?
So those parts of the game are very funny. And then you've got the actual gameplay of it, which, as we've established, is fine for something you spend a dollar on and play for 15 minutes. But the promise that bigger stuff was coming meant that I ended up playing this game for 3 or 4 hours. And in all of that time, I only unlocked one mini game.
Ooh.
Because from what I've read online, most of it is RNG. It's not like you play for a minimum amount of time and then you definitely get it. It's randomly based, and maybe...
Because I thought it was tied to score, so I was always trying to play for high scores.
And that's the thing. That's what I was doing as well, but I was getting scores that I was like, I'm doing well enough that if it was going to be based on that, it should be coming out. Because there are points like in the random match your dad thing. So you'll spawn as one of the boys and you have to run to the right dad. and then the dads will all swap positions, and then you'll spawn as a new boy, right? It gets to a point where they start spawning behind shower curtains, and at that point in the game, there's only so far you can kind of reasonably expect to the average player to be able to get to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Based on, like, actual skill, because, you know, you get to see them for a split second, but it starts to become difficult and that kind of thing. I also read on a couple of forums and stuff, because I was like, I've been playing this game for a long time and I haven't unlocked, you know, this bigger stuff that people are talking
about. And especially as when you boot the game up and you go into it, it shows you locked screens that are suggesting more parts of the game.
Yeah, so you have icons for, like, mystery games and stuff that aren't unlocked yet.
And dad-loadable content.
And so the dad-loadable content, that's the one I actually managed to get to.
Yeah.
And again, when everybody talks about this game totally changing and opening up, the example, in retrospect now, I realize that the only example any of them gave was the Flappy Bird-like bath flying thing, which is the one that I got. So part of it, I think, is RNG, and part of it as well is, like, I read around, and some people just had pretty major bugs that were claiming they had bugs. Again, with a game like this, you don't know what's a bug and what's a feature, where they were saying that they'd sunk huge amounts of time into it and never unlocked something and had to just end up going into, like, the settings files and editing them. So when you actually get to these unlocks, they're kind of more of the same.
And at best, I have to be honest, I didn't unlock all of them either, and I just went to YouTube to look at them.
Yeah, see, I ended up cheating and messing with the settings file to get one of the others.
And I think that shows a lot about who we are as people. Whereas you did actual codings, I just found some teenager on the internet.
Adding a single line to a text file is hardly coding, but...
David, your new name is Hackerman. You are Slowpoke number two, the hackster.
And now I have to hack us back in time.
Yes, back in time so we can save those precious hours, David.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the point that I'm trying to make here is, like, when people were talking about this opening up, I thought it was going to be a total game changer.
Like, off the rails, it was going to go zany, it was going
to... Yeah, or at the very least change genre to some extent. Like, it was going to go from spoofing shitty simulators on Steam to spoofing visual novels or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, visual interactive novels.
Or just go through all the genres. Like, you're racing cars. Now you're going to the moon. Now it's a strategy game.
Absolutely. And so, like, I think about a lot about the trailer for this game as well. The one that was a spoof of that Kanye song, Power. Now we've got to do all that shower or whatever. And so you have this 45-second video clip that I feel like it had more creative energy in it than the actual game did in some respects.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I get, like, I'm going to press pause for a moment here because I want to make this very clear. I understand that this is a joke, and I understand that a lot about the joke, like, when they're sitting down and making this game or people are talking about it on forums, the idea that one player played for 150 hours and didn't unlock anything because that's how the RNG worked out, to some people, that's hilarious and makes the joke even funnier. Like, I get that there's that kind of mildly trollish but, like, wholesomely trollish kind of behavior that's kind of going into the game.
It's like kind of opt-in pranking.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Because it's never pretending that it's going to change the world, but you kind of know there's stuff there, so you're kind of sitting down to play it, and I can understand that. There's just something for me, this game sits on, like, the edge of internet humor I like and don't like.
It's that very border. And I think that one of the notes we have in the rundown today is we need to discuss whether or not this game is good. And I don't like to boil games down to a binary yes, no, thumbs up, thumbs down thing. But part of the reason that's in the rundown today is because I think that you and I, where that line is between internet humor that we like and internet humor that we don't like, is in that marginally different position that's wide enough for this game,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, in fact, it's like we're going to talk about the pixels of difference, I think. Because I don't think I actually have asked you outright if you liked it or not.
Ultimately, no.
Yeah.
I think it's one of these things that... It's not like Bloodborne, where I played it and was kind of angry at the community for pretending it was something so different from what I ended up playing. And
yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
With Bloodborne, just to clarify what I mean by that, I feel like the community's bought into this idea of what Bloodborne is supposed to be, and it just isn't what they're claiming it is. I don't think it's to that extent. I think it honestly is just, like you've said, an element of taste of humor, right? I'm happy this game exists for the people who like it. I think that my life is better because this game exists and the effect that it will have on the indie scene around it and that kind of thing. ultimately, when I sit down and play it and walk away, I say, that time was badly spent.
And that's, like, fair, right? How we value our time and what how we enjoy things. That's an equation that I think we all have to make as individuals. And for me, every time I play this game, I chuckle. Even when I'm sitting there and I can't unlock something, I just still find the whole experience enjoyable in this kind of, like, this is so dumb. I love all the dumb jokes. Like, it just, even though I spent 5 hours playing these dumb shower games, like, over the course of the week, I still felt like it was well spent for me, because every dumb cutscene would just make me laugh. Every dumb thing they say, every unlockable item that's just another thing you'd find in a shower, like soap, right? And then it would have a splash page telling you the attributes of the soap. I just enjoyed. And I think that this, it's like, it's just taste that is what it comes down to.
Yeah, and I will say this, the presentation of the game is great. The only thing about it that I don't like is the pacing. And the pacing is just, it's so incredibly bad.
And I can't fault you there, because I feel like the experience isn't benefited from making you grind that much.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like forcing you to play a dumb game for half an hour or so to unlock a new thing maybe might have been a better thing. But if there are genuinely people out there playing for 100 hours, which is its own separate issue, right? That's too, like, I feel like that random number generation should be capped at, like, okay, someone's played for 2 hours, give them a new thing.
Yeah, and this is where, like, I want to think about games like Surgeon Simulator or Co-op or Octodad, because, you know, this game came out in 2015 when we're at a very interesting point in what the word simulator means to gamers. So you get around, like, 2013, you get Surgeon Simulator, which the term simulator in that is obviously ironic, and it's the first game of its kind to make something stupid and wacky and claim that it's an accurate simulation, because prior to that it was like Euro Truck Simulator.
Yeah, or Farm Simulator.
Yeah, where it's more about, like, hard numbers kind of management sims, that kind of thing.
Yeah, intricately modeled detailed cabs of farm equipment and trains as well.
Yeah, things all like of that kind of stuff. Then we get, you know, Goat Simulator a little further down the track, which is, you know, I don't know the exact mentality behind the design process, but to me felt like it was following in the footsteps of a game like Surgeon Simulator. Then at that point, everything goes to hell. Everybody starts slapping the word simulator on their shitty games as an excuse for why their games are so shitty. And we get to 2015, and this game comes out satirizing not serious uses of the word simulator, like Farm Simulator and that kind of thing, but satirizing the co-option of the word simulator by shitty low-budget Steam games.
Yeah.
And so in that context, I get the joke. Like, I get what it's doing, and I get that there's more to it than your average shitty game, but it's not Surgeon Simulator.
Yeah.
It's not made with that level of precision. It's not Octodad. It's not Get Over It or something like that. It's not Co-op, you know? Games that are so much more precise and elegant in their actual design. And I think that I was expecting something more to that level of contemplation, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think the fact that you could be stuck with this joke for hours works against it. Because if this was just a fun half hour experience where you play a whole bunch of dumb games and you just have a great time, perfect joke in my mind.
And I would have fucking loved the shit out of that. A dollar, a half hour, and 5 or 6 really solid laughs.
Yeah,
like,
right?
Hell yes, a great way to spend 30 minutes.
That sounds great, right? Like, but the idea of spending any more time on it, we played Journey, I think, recently, and that game only went for a couple of hours for me.
Yeah, I think I played it an hour 45.
And every moment of that was just gold.
This isn't necessarily, because that's an unfair comparison. It is unfair to compare Journey to some big budget games, but I know what you mean. Like, when we're talking about the input of our time, the ticking clock of our lives that will one day end and then we will be put into the ground.
I'm not talking about literal quality. I'm talking about my experience in use of my time.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing as well that makes it, I think, even worse is that timing is important and pacing is important to every kind of creative art, but I would argue especially to comedy, especially to humor, timing is crucial. And so to rely on RNG for that is bizarre. And it's part of the reason I think that comedy games are harder to do and rarer than comedies in other media, because player interaction inherently makes pacing difficult to manage.
There's also another thing too. So recently I've been seeing a lot of those affiliate marketing kind of videos. I must have done something to convince you, Google, that I wanted to be scammed, basically.
Yeah, you accidentally click on one link and then for the next 3 weeks, those are all the ads you see.
I started Googling finances. I'm trying to get my life in order. And now it's like, oh, you want to be scammed? Here's some scams. And I got really mad and I was trying to record like a reaction video, basically, of some of these ads. So I'm sitting down trying to record stuff and I just want to do a dumb joke. I want to sit down, right? And just do something off the cuff. Make a 5-minute video. Share it on Facebook with my friends. Here we go. I spent like 3 hours to make nothing because it just turned out not to work the way I wanted to and not be funny. And I put a lot of time into a joke that didn't work. At some point when you're making a joke, you or a game like this, it's not like you're going to feel that crunch of being like, I've spent 100 hours... making this joke. I don't have time to perfectly pace it.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. And I think anybody who's done creative work feels that crushing moment where they've tried to make something and they get to this point where they look back at all the time and they're like, wow, this is all I've got from that. And a lot of the time that's imposter syndrome. Ignore that, keep going if it's good. But sometimes you really just have made something bad.
And I don't know, you know, why, if it was purely for the joke of people playing 100 hours or what have you, but I could easily imagine someone being like, when do these unlock? Put in a random number generator. I do not want to design a curve. Like, I just want to get this out.
And that this is where we come back to the dollar. Because when I talk about the dollar, it isn't so much in this instance about what it costs me in money to play it, but what we're compensating the designer to have made.
Yep.
And if I'm going to give the designer a dollar for a game, the idea that they would go, yeah, RNG's good enough for a dollar. Yeah, fair play. High five on that.
Not surprised, right?
Yeah. I will say as well that this is one of these games that has an element of weird for the sake of weird. And this is another point where we find that line in the comedy divide, right? For me, weird for the sake of weird very rarely impresses me. Thinking of games like Genital Jousting is one that's been in the news recently, and I kind of feel shitty pointing to that one because apparently it's got a very gender-aware first player, like single-player campaign.
I think it was their proper launch from Early Access or whatever. I don't know exactly. They released a full single-player experience that I have actually played through and genuinely enjoyed. And while I don't feel like it's super in-depth, it has things to say and it says them.
And that's awesome. We're going to put that to the side for the moment because we're going to talk about what this the initial impression this game made on me when I saw it in Early Access, you know, 18 months, 2 years ago.
Consider yourself caveated. Continue. Yeah.
So Genital Jousting is a game that has a very colorful sort of pinata-esque sort of color scheme. It's a party game, a multiplayer game where you each player controls a penis that moves around the screen. Kind of like if you think about Snake in a game like that where you've got this very long,
I feel
wobbly
like you're
penis.
I feel like you're describing some people's nightmares right now.
And so the idea is it's a quick play party game where you have these long, colorful, Mardi Gras-esque penises, each of which has a pseudo butthole between the testicles, and you have to try and get your penis into the buttholes of the other penis players. And if you win, your leaderboard is represented by how long your penis is. And if you win, I think you get a little poot of cum at the end on the score screen.
That is my favorite thing you've ever said on this podcast.
So that game is probably a whole bunch of people's awesome bags. And I want to make it very clear that I'm not some like right-wing conservative Puritan who's all like, oh, this is silly and this shouldn't be allowed.
Filth.
Filth.
Ban it.
It's millennials. Brr.
We need to make this into books so we can burn them.
Yeah, basically. That's cool. It exists. I like that people get to play with penises and have fun with penises. And I especially like that people use this fun, silly penis game to talk about really serious issues about toxic masculinity and shit like that.
And trust me, when I have a bunch of people over at my house, we're going to get our controllers that vibrate and play with our penises on the TV all day.
And that's great for you. I will not be one of those friends.
Yes.
I saw that game and I'm like, It's dicks, I guess. And to some people, like, colourful dicks that fuck each other in the butt, oh, they love that, and that's awesome that they love that. For me, I'm like, it's colourful dicks that fuck each other in the butt. Yeah. Like,
and that's fine, because, like, jokes, like, humour especially, it's something that lands for you or it doesn't land.
Yeah, and I think that when you have games like that that are weird for the sake of weird, there's a very particular kind of enthusiasm that comes along with it for people who resonate with that weird for the sake of weird kind of game. I'm not one of them. Like, there's an element of surprise and joy that doesn't really hit me from games like that. And I think that Share With Your Dad, one of the things about it that doesn't resonate with me is that the little things it does, like all of the dad joke puns that you get in loading screens, it's like, yeah, I've heard that before. And like the idea of the word dad being overused in that kind of meme-ish language way.
Yeah.
Not only are we 2 or 3 years beyond the point where, you know, the word dad was getting suffixed to everything as like a meme-ish kind of, as a part of our internet culture language at that point. It's also just not something that grabbed me that much at the time, you know? And so a lot of the little mechanisms that it uses to create that consistent engagement, that consistent humor that might have carried me through that extra playtime to get those other unlocks aren't enough for someone like me, you know?
That's fair. There's nothing worse than, like, having someone repeat a joke in your face over and over and over again, and you're just like, I just don't find it funny. Didn't find it funny. I just, there's nothing here.
Yeah,
and I think, like, the problem can be with how the internet and culture at large deals with things it enjoys, and the way that we talk about what we enjoy on the internet, that can really make games like this frustrating, because people can get crazy enthusiastic about something that's a pretty funny joke, for me at least, but I don't know if I'm gonna hold it up as like the cultural touchstone for me and my generation.
Yeah.
Some people might, but it's not me.
I will not be talking about, like, you know, because we're 3 years on from the release of this game, and there are podcasts that I listen to that bring this up fondly now. This would never have been that kind of game for me, even if I played it at the time. And I really don't like to be one of those people who boils things down to the base mechanics and the moment-to-moment experience of play. But that, you know, we've got the pacing that kills it, and I think that kills it as well. That in the moment, part of the joke is that the game isn't actually fun, even though it's presented really well and would seem really great on like a stream or something like that.
I do think
actually playing it is not that great.
I do think it streams really well too.
Yeah,
like it's one of those games that like you can YouTube it really well and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I will also say that like a game like this, the community generates myths about it too. And so I read stuff that's, you know, that you unlock like the spider dad if you do this kind of thing, and you know, one of the dads and one of the boys, like one of the dad boy pairs, they don't really look very much alike. So if you get to this point in the game where they start generating random dads to confuse you, you can actually match him with his biological dad, and then that, you know, generates this whole new level where you get the spider dad, like all of this kind of stuff. And it's like, I'm not going to put this much effort into the game.
As far as we know, that's all real.
Yeah, and if it is, fair play. Yeah. Great. I love, you know, for the cryptid community of Shower With Your Dad, that's fucking rad as all hell.
Yeah, I find that kind of, that stuff, I just, it's almost like unknowable for me. I lack that puzzle solving, and so it frustrates me.
It's like when people talk about the late game content in, you know, oh, if you play this, you know, action RPG for 160 hours and you get to the late game on your second U game plus, and you really start to unlock the deeper mechanics in the alacrity system. It's like,
that's when the game presents itself. It's not good enough.
When people talk about Spider Dad, I hear it that way. It's like, I am never going to spend this much time on this game.
I
am a casual player of games like this. I am not ashamed of that.
Yeah. Especially when you think of games into lifestyle and stuff like that, and how we can balance gameplay, because that's really important.
We've talked a lot about Shower With Your Dad. I feel like there are a pretty strong picture of how we both feel about it. I think underscoring it for me, like I said, the games industry is better because this game exists. It's had a positive effect on the indie scene. It's had a positive effect on games as a whole and the games community in a lot of ways. So not for me, and I am disappointed by what I felt like the promise of this game was, because I don't feel, and that's not even the game's fault. I feel like the community did this game a disservice by talking it up to the extent that it did.
Now, if you still find the phrase "shower with your dad" similar to 2015, do you still shower with your dad? Funny now, and you have a dollar, go here to play. It'll be fun for like half an hour or so. And that's about it.
Yeah, just bear in mind that when people talk about it opening up, they're talking about it turning into Flappy Bird.
But basically,
that's what they mean by opening up.
Yeah, if you're lucky, you'll get the Flappy Bird.
Yeah, so play it with a reasonable expectation about the amount of time you want to put into it, and you'll probably have a great time.
Yeah. So I don't know if there's a graceful transition to go from this kind of meme humor joke into what Duskers is. So I'm just going to put this here instead, because Duskers is like not only tonally different, but in terms of gameplay, remarkably solid.
Yeah, other than the fact that they're both relatively low, like, tier in terms of, you know, triple anus. That's pretty good, huh? I can't be the first person who said that, right?
Triple anus.
Other than the fact that they're both very far away from the triple anus, there's almost nothing remotely comparable about these two games. Duskers is something I put on the list. It was something I saw in an extra credits games you might not have tried.
Mm.
And it is very good. To those of you who aren't familiar with Duskers, the basic premise is that it's a roguelike where you have to explore derelict spaceships using these robotically controlled drones. The catch, though, is that you don't control them with traditional video game controls. You control them with terminal commands. So you have a Linux-style command line, and you type in things like open door or navigate room A to room B, that kind of thing. And it's all presented through this really well-designed sort of 80s sci-fi horror CRT green scale aesthetic. So if you think about like what all the monitors would look like in Alien, imagine if you were just a drone pilot in that world, and you get a feel for what the tone and the presentation of this game is.
When you boot the game up, it has like a fake operating system that the game then launches from.
Yeah, and you get those really great bleeps and clunks as the hard drive spins up.
The weird purple colors and lines as the monitor sort of warms into itself, and a real separation of yourself from the game. It reminds me a lot of Superhot. And how it presented itself with the console and the experience of booting you in and out of games.
Absolutely. And like, I played this long before Superhot. And, you know, Pony Island is another example of a game that uses this kind of interface. Any game that does this, that puts a screen between you and the action, I think is a very clever technique when used well. So, roguelike, obviously, things are very randomly generated. It's about doing runs. You go through, you're trying to collect scrap to upgrade your drones and give them better scanners and that kind of thing. There are dangers on these ships that can cause your drones to be destroyed. They might require repair or they might be lost. And so that's the basic sort of gameplay through line, is that you're exploring this.
You're exploring a galaxy and a universe, and you're going into different ships to get what you need and get out and just to keep going and keep journeying.
And for some reason, you are alone. The ship that you're on, one of the loading things that comes up says that, you know, the ship that you're on is massively undercrewed because you're the only living crew member on it. And any of the ships that you visit have no crew members on them either. Something has happened to all sentient life in this universe.
And that pitch that you've given is exactly what I heard. And that was what I was expecting. Right? I was expecting this game to be with the terminal prompts to be really like finicky in that kind of nerdy way that I thought I'd find enjoyable. I was expecting to be a little bit creeped out because I'm the only person and all my friends are drones named after my best friends. There was a drone called David. We'll talk about what happened. We'll talk about what happened to David later.
No.
And this is what I was expecting. And I got everything I expected.
Yeah, it's a really weird game where they nail the pitch totally fine.
Yeah.
And the thing is, with a pitch like this, when you do a pitch like this perfectly, it's actually not that exciting. Like, the gimmick is great that you use this terminal to do it.
And the
But it's not the kind of thing that's going to move a console, for example.
And it's going to be very interesting to talk about it, because I think we've talked about before, when you enjoy something, it's very hard to make that sound interesting.
Yeah, I think more than that, it's boring when promises are kept. Like, ultimately, if somebody keeps a promise, that's pretty dull. And the designers of this game made a promise and kept it.
You did what you said you were going to do.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there won't be any drama as I enjoy the thing I got from a reasonable transaction.
I'm not trying to get a refund within 2 hours. I'm just gonna enjoy my own life.
Yeah, so there's a lot about this game that on the surface, in terms of the fact that it meets all of the promises it made, that it's a good, satisfying game to play, and the fact that it ultimately doesn't stream very well, stuff like that.
Mm.
this feels dull in the shape of it, but it's actually a really satisfying game because of all of those reasons and also just in and of itself. So
I think for me, the first thing that stands out, and this stands out in a lot of games, I noticed it very early, is the ambience, right, that a game can create. And a lot of games, you can kind of feel disconnected, especially when you're playing with like a third person character and they're running around, you can feel a bit disconnected. But they do a lot of simple things in this game to connect you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so at first you boot it up and there's all the crackle of the fake loading screens of computers. And then you notice your own breathing. And then you notice like the ship in the game. You can hear your own ship around you.
Yeah, that's a like the sound design is really good for that.
And then as you're listening to your own ship, you'll pilot each individual drone just for a microsecond to see what it's seen, and you'll hear crackly audio play overhead, and then you'll go back to the terminal screen to watch the whole schematic of the ship, and you're just there, and then all of a sudden, the ship starts creaking. Oh, it's just the ship settling, that's fine. And then an alarm goes off, and then you're panicking, and you're furiously typing on the keyboard. And it just really builds this energy that I find hard to describe.
Yeah, the game is very, very good at this. So just to clarify, one of the big experiential things of the game is there's two basic things that you see when you play. The first is the schematic view, which gives you your terminal on the right and a view of this randomly generated ship. It's got all of its different rooms, all the different doors and the airlocks and all that kind of thing. The second kind of view is the piloting a specific drone view. So that's where you go and you can see what the camera of the drone is viewing and you can manually pilot that specific drone.
And it's such an interesting look too. They designed, I remember listening to Deb say, they designed the game in a 3D environment, but the way the drone sees things is kind of a 2D interpretation of that.
Yeah, it's very clever. And it's got a lot of like static and interference in the view, so you can never really make anything out.
In fact, one of the commands is to sort of clean up that video feed as well, because sometimes it'll just get messy.
Yeah, it really leans quite heavily into the unreliability of your equipment. And so you've got the CRT monitor that's got to be degaussed. You've got the video feeds on the cameras that deteriorate over time and sometimes might just drop out. And even when they're working perfectly, you're only getting a very vague interpretation of what you're actually seeing.
And then sometimes each individual drone has just a different quality camera and sees in different colors.
So you have the cameras of these drones that only show a vague idea. And when you're controlling any particular drone, you can only see what that camera sees. And you get the sense that there's only a limited memory in what the drone can see because the fog of war fills in behind you very rapidly as you move. And then you've got the schematic view where you can't actually see what's in any of the rooms. At the very least, you can see the whole map all at once.
Yeah.
And so limited information and unreliability is done very, very well to build this sense of apprehension and dread. And in a lot of games, or a lot of, like I've talked about this before, the way that horror tries to keep things analog because analog can be unreliable and digital is either on or off. This does a really great job of walking that line in between them where it's like just barely digital. And so the sensors that you have attached to these drones, you kind of get the impression it's analog equipment that's generating a digital signal that's just getting, you know, messed up on the way through as the radio, you get radio interference and all of that kind of stuff.
It genuinely feels like one of the better simulations of how things work when you put them through their paces.
Yeah, like everything is just barely hanging on. And that's a very interesting element of the gameplay design of this game as well. If you compare it to roguelikes aren't really my thing, but most roguelikes that I've played, you start off at a particular level of power, you play through the run, things will get harder as you go, but generally you're getting more powerful as you go as well. You're getting better gun boots in Downwell or better lasers and teleporters in FTL.
And you'll get more life or more cash or more stuff.
And then when you finish the run, you might get some kind of meta currency that makes you start off in a slightly better position on your next run.
Or you might unlock something that you can use in your next run or find. That's typically the go.
And the idea is it's always about building towards, in a lot of roguelikes that I've played, building towards the big end boss, getting better and better and better as you go, getting slightly deeper each run until you're perfecting it and you get to that end. It
has that very arcadey feel.
Yeah, absolutely. In this game, it's almost like the inverse of that. So you don't have any kind of meta currency or whatever that makes your next run easier. And in the default difficulty settings, like, so you'll start off, you have very basic monsters that are very easy to manipulate, get them to move around the ship, you get them trapped in a room with an airlock, you vent them out into space, you get them trapped in a room that you just lock down, you don't have to go near them, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Really easy to trick, really easy to avoid.
Understandable.
Yeah. As you go on, some enemies might have guns, and so there's a bigger threat because, you know, their range of attack is larger. Then you start getting enemies that don't trip off your motion sensors. You start getting enemies that can travel through the vents on a ship. So even if you lock down all of the rooms, you don't necessarily know that you're going to be safe. When you reset and start a new run in this, by default, the monster difficulty stays the same as at the end of your last run. So if you're getting like really high-end difficult enemies because you've gotten quite far in a run, next run starts with enemies like that showing up from ship one. But your drones are at the position that you would be on your very first time you booted this game up. So it's like in this game, there isn't a clear end boss that you're fighting towards, and every time you play it, it gets harder and harder, and you feel more and more overwhelmed by what's going on around you.
In fact, the only thing that stays with you in the game is, I think, the story logs that you can find.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And your skill at the game, right? And that leans a lot on that meta, the actual skill.
I will say this. I think that the default settings of that is actually bad game design, because eventually you're going to run into a point where you just can't get past the first two or three ships. I think it's a bad way to design the game from a run-to-run thing. If there was a different kind of way of packaging that, where the idea was like, okay, your run is not so much how far you get with your drones before you die. It's more about how many consecutive runs you do before you have to reset the monsters back to the default position so you can get anywhere. Maybe that would work, but the game is very light in that kind of thing. And the distinction between runs is so much blurrier than in a more arcadey game like you were talking about. I feel like every time I start a new run, it isn't as segmented. I feel like I'm another random survivor somewhere out in this vast empty universe who's going on their own totally unrelated journey. And the only linking thing between was, like you say, is the exploration of this story element.
Yeah, you only get the most, I think the most information you get is you are woken up from cryosleep. You're alone on this ship with a bunch of drones, right? You're never looking for food. You're never looking for water. All you're looking for is different drone parts and just fuel to keep track.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Just maintaining is a huge part of it. Again, like compared to other roguelikes, where you don't have to worry about your equipment deteriorating as you go. You will, if you're anything like me, you're spending three times the amount of scrap just keeping things running as you are spending them on actual upgrade.
The more you use your drones and the less you maintain them, the more unreliable they get. Sometimes you'll just get that prompt that just says, oh, drone two, camera feeds out, can't see what it's doing. But you'll be like, no, but that drone, it can tow everything.
Yeah.
I need it to tow things.
And this is what's so fucking great about this, right? Because we haven't actually talked about the actual control gimmick all that much. You can pilot the drones directly using the arrow key. So you get your basic, you know, rotate anti-clockwise, rotate clockwise, forward and backwards control.
Classic tank controls.
Yeah, really, really simple stuff. From the schematic view, that's where you type all of your commands. And that'll be like, open doors, use this upgrade to scan the room, gather scrap, siphon fuel, all of that kind of thing.
I mean, you can use the console commands when you're piloting a drone, but they actually are limited to that drone, so they become less useful.
You can. What I really love about this is the structure of it. If you're anything, again, like me, I find terminal commands quite satisfying, and I played this game before I even got any good at Linux or anything like that. And it's accessible enough that any player can learn it. There was only maybe 20-odd commands in the whole thing.
And they're very straightforward. Navigate, tow,
but
gather.
What's important about it is it adheres to the logic of terminal commands. And while it is more forgiving than like really hardcore stuff, if you type the first three letters of a word and then hit space, it'll autofill the rest of that command for you. Things like that. You still have to adhere to the argument structure of each command. And so if you're typing furiously because a monster's coming down on you and you fuck up what you type in, command doesn't go through. And it creates this really great sense of tension because you have to be precise and cognizant of what you mean even while under pressure.
Yeah, the way this game deals with mistakes is so interesting because it essentially just, they just happen. My favorite example of this was when I sent David the drone.
Fuck you a little bit because of this.
So I sent David the drone into a room. I'm like, we're all done. It's time to go. But I can't, like, David the drone, he's on his own because we've put a monster in that room so he could loot the last scrap. And so I send David the drone to this airlock and I'm like, oh, it's great. I'm just going to dock the ship at this new airlock. Absolutely fine. All I do is type dock and then the airlock. But when I type dock, I hit enter. And then when I type the airlock button, it opens the airlock door. And all that happens after that is an alarm rings, a prompt comes up that says, this room is now venting into space. And then a line that says, drone David is now in space. Actually, it says tumbling through space.
Tumbling through space, yeah.
And you just sit there going like, oh, but I just made a type.
Yeah, and these kinds of mistakes are so integral to the core of the game. For me, when I first started playing it, I had it on the default difficulty where you get random events like doors failing and rooms flooding with radiation and meteor strikes. And that was awesome, right?
Yeah, and the more old the ship is, the more likely that's to happen.
And I love that too, that when you go to each ship, you get a basic, again, kind of unreliable breakdown of what the ship is kind of like. And, you know, it'll say that there's, you know, maybe two kind of infestation types on this ship and it's this many years old and this likely to be prone to radiation and that kind of thing. And so you have a vague idea of what you're getting yourself into. And so when I'm playing a game just focusing on doing only that, that level of difficulty is very strong as long as you remember to reset the monster difficulty every now and then to keep it playable.
Yeah.
The way I tend to play roguelikes, though, is I'm generally listening to a podcast or watching a TV show or something at the same time. With a game like this, I definitely wouldn't recommend doing it before you've at least gotten a really good sampling of the horror thing going on just by just doing this.
If you're like me, you can't concentrate properly on two things. I do that a lot, but with games that I feel that I can just lean into, this is a game that I feel demands your full attention.
I think that that's true. And when I first got it, it didn't have the level of granularity for the difficulty settings it does now. It has much better difficulty settings now. And so I could turn off certain random events. I could make the level of scrap I got a little bit higher, the level of repairs I need to do a little bit lower. Because I've actually sunk probably like 30, 40 hours into this game by this point. I started playing this years ago. And so being able to keep it fresh to some extent by being able to go, you know what, I'm going to turn the difficulty down and just have a couple of more casual runs, like easier going runs. I really appreciate that about a game. Because while the intention of this game is to be scary and punishing and all that kind of stuff, it's got that flexibility that lets me have a little bit less intense fun with it.
And I think that that flexibility is crucial for roguelikes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If you're going to be, like, if this game is all about random number generator and randomness, and the system could just dick you over at any opportunity, you want to have the flexibility to just be like, I want my difficulty curve to start here and go up at this rate. And that can, if you can present that in some easy, simple options, that's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. All of that kind of stuff, like I said, though, you have to be careful that when you mess with difficulty settings, you don't do it to the extent that it undermines the tone, if that's what you're looking for. Like I said, I'm at the point now where I've got that tone, I've got that atmosphere, I've got the passive narrative the game's putting towards me, and so I can throw all the difficulty right down to the bottom and just dick around with some drones and have a bit of tactile fun typing in some commands. The story of this game, though, again, is not mind-blowingly over the top. It's not massively exciting, but it is interestingly presented for a game of this type.
I think something that it reminds me of When I was a teenager playing StarCraft, I was really bad at it, and I would just cheat. And the same with Warcraft as well. I'd basically just cheat my way through all those games because I found the story to be really engaging. And so I would just put all the money cheats on, get all the cool things I'd like, and stomp through it. And so sometimes that's enough, like, to be able to do that.
With a game like that, we're talking about, when you talk about games like that, we have a very traditional linear written narrative that requires you to meet gaming checkpoints to get.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely makes sense to drop the difficulty down, use cheats or whatever if you're interested in that story. Game like this, I would be undermined by that if the narrative presentation of it was your main thing, because it's all about this horror sci-fi aesthetic. You are apparently the last person alive in the universe.
You certainly feel that way as you explore a countless ship that is empty.
And the only really guiding sort of line through it is that when you go onto these ships, sometimes you'll find uncorrupted data records that give you a little snippet that ends up in your database. And some of these are for color and flavor. They're about, you know, this guy who just lost his job and has to talk to his family about how he's going to have to come back home and can't provide for his husband and his son anymore. And then you'll have other ones that actually provide clues as to what the fuck happened to the rest of the universe.
Yeah, it is the emptiest sci-fi game ever.
Yeah, completely. It is so, so empty. And these little sound things that you were talking about right at the start of when we started talking about this, you have like the clunk of the ship. And when you pilot a drone, you get the hum of their little electric motor. Those really sterile industrial sounds make you recognize how empty everything else is. There are no organic sounds in this that aren't threats.
Yeah, and I just remember once there was such a loud clunking sound as my ship went from dock to dock. I was genuinely panicking because I'm like, what happens if something gets into the ship? I can't do anything if something gets into the ship.
Yeah.
I had to take a moment to calm down.
Because a word that we haven't used yet, but I think is incredibly important to the play experience of this game, is composure. You have to remain composed. You have to constantly be thinking because you need to use a computer language, sure, but you need to use cohesive language to survive this situation. It isn't about raw arcade reflex in a typical sense. The very, very light story that the game presents is this idea that, you know, you're the last person alive or whatever. What happened to everyone else? And so you'll go to these different ships and find these little logs. And a cute thing that the game does is that when you download a log, you get a little note from your ship's computer.
Yeah, it seems like it's like some sort of AI.
This is a clue for this potential theory of sentient extinction.
It matches keywords from the logs.
So, like, you'll see something about how on a particular ship some replicators were malfunctioning, and it'll make a little note about how, you know, potential explanation for absence of sentient life, grey goo theory. And so you've got all of these very, very sort of Asimov era sci-fi kind of tropes of like the super predator theory or the space epidemic theory.
Or even the AI singularity kind of event. Yeah. These are like the archetypes of humanity's destruction kind of things. And they're just so thinly referenced. I felt driven forward to try and find out what I could.
Yeah, and it sounds kind of unimpressive to say this, because it's not like, oh, what's the big J.J. Abrams mystery that we're going to uncover? What's the mystery box? What's at the center of No Man's Sky? What do we find? It's not like a really clear goal. It's almost like apparently futile as you're doing it. It's the vaguest hints and the vaguest glimpse. And all of these theories, they don't necessarily contradict one another, but there are just as many clues about theory A as there are about theory B.
It feels like whatever happened millennia ago, and you've just woken up so far post-humanity's extinction that it is almost like pointless finding out what happened.
Yeah, and it's like, even if you have the answer, even if you're like, oh, it was a grey goo scenario, all the people got turned into nanites, like,
what is that going to do? You can't stop it.
You're still the last human being in the universe.
You were just like stuck there, alone, with your drones named after your dead friends.
I want to make the note that I named my drones like Alice and Ben so that they would be A, B, C, and D. Like, I didn't name them after you.
Well, I feel personally insulted.
Yeah. It is a good... it is a good trick that the drones actually have names, yeah, and they are randomly generated, but I will often just refer to them as Drone 1 and Drone 2 because they have numeric values as well.
Yeah, no, I named them after people I know for all the different things. So I think originally you were my generator drone, but then you became like the drone that would explore and gather, it would monitor and hack into things.
Yeah.
There's lots of fun little things you can do.
Yeah, you get your drones to interface with the ship R2-D2 style and all that kind of thing.
I think I've talked about it before, but the idea of even the slimmest bit of customizability can be just everything in a game. Mm. That little bit of a mark you can put somewhere so that you can keep track of something is just always enjoyable.
Yeah. One other thing that we didn't mention that I think is just a really great terminal box tick is that you can use the alias command to make your own macros effectively. Yeah. So you can have, I had one called Flea, which was just, it ordered every single drone to run back to the mothership and that kind of stuff.
I was trying to write one called Purge, which was just a really FU ship, which would open up as many doors as possible and flush everything into space.
You can self-destruct a drone and you can set a custom timer for it. So if a drone is in trouble, you can just blow it up and kill everything in that room.
What? Cool.
Yeah, just really awesome stuff like that. And to get through the terminal stuff, you type the help command, which brings up a help dialogue box, but does not pause the game. And so everything about this is just really satisfying. You've got the horror aesthetic that's perfect. You've got these vague, underwhelming explanations of the emptiness of the universe that's just really good. You've got this very pleasing use of the terminal, and again, when you hit the enter key, you get the little bloop of the command getting entered properly, or that did it, of it not being registered, mm-hmm. and all the doors make sounds when they open and close. It's honestly just a really well-made game, and I'm kind of disappointed that we have this double episode here, where we've got Shower With Your Dad and Duskers next to each other that are unrelated in any sense. The only reason we had a double episode for them was because we didn't quite think they could fill an episode on their own.
Yeah, but we still wanted to play and talk about them.
But if we can come to the end here and try and make some kind of link,
yep,
it's the difference between a game that's kooky and fun and over the top and silly on the surface that doesn't live up to the promise I felt the community made on behalf of that game, compared to a game that on the surface is kind of not fun, if you think about it. I have to type words in every single time I want to do things? Everything's bleak and horrible and empty, but just delivered so fully on its point,
yeah,
that I'm 1,000 times more satisfied with Duskers than I am with this other game that feels like it should be so much more exciting and so much more over the top, you know? Yeah. And I think it's just a really great argument about execution and how that matters.
I find myself sometimes really divorced from conversation on the internet. I don't really go and seek it too often. I usually absorb it via personalities I enjoy. So
yeah,
it's
absolutely
kind of more funneled. So when I looked at both of these games, what I was going to say as linking them is these are both, for me, games that were like, we're this, and they were. Because when I looked at Shower With Your Dad, it wasn't the cultural zeitgeist. It was when it came out. I go, that looks dumb. I played it. It was.
Yeah, and that's why I want to make that really clear distinction, that I feel like the community overpromised what Shower With Your Dad was, not the creators. Really, it's like I was saying, it's about sort of expectation to some extent and execution to another, but it is difficult to end a conversation on these two games when they're so, so separate. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that these games can kind of be tied together in the meta sense of people had ideas, and I feel that they both executed what they wanted out of them. No matter what you say about Shower With Your Dad, it delivers on the idea of itself, this idea of being dumb, what other people say.
Because we're getting into dangerous territory here where we're trying to predict what the artist's intent was. And if the artist's intent was to make something dumb and kind of funny, hell yeah, they succeeded, 100%. Yeah. If their idea was to make a satire of the simulator scene at that point in time, maybe it really falls to the end of that spectrum for me, where it's like, is it satirizing the thing or is it just doing the thing and claiming it's a satire and thus entirely failing to send up every shitty simulator knockoff that was trying to do that?
Feel like is every satirical video game's problem is it ends up doing the thing it's trying to make fun of.
Yeah, it is the not another teen movie of satire.
Yeah,
we're not talking like Mel Brooks levels here.
Yeah, and Duskers is just like, you're going to enter terminal commands to pilot drones at the end of space, and then you do.
And then you do, though.
Yeah, and it's really lovely.
I'm reminded of that thing I said earlier in the episode about genital jousting, where it was just like, with some people like, oh, you colourful dicks who fuck each other in the bum.
Yeah.
And to me, it's like, oh, okay, I guess you're colourful dicks that fuck each other in the bum.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, some people who would be like, oh, you're at the edge of space and you type in terminal commands. And I'm like, you're at the edge of space and you type in terminal commands.
Yeah. Yeah. And that makes total sense. I feel like what I'm kind of trying to get at is like these games, they can be things for people and they might not be things for others, but I still feel that there's something there that separates them from just crap games.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Neither of them are cookie cutter, factory line, gray crap.
I feel like they were, like work and effort went into them, and I don't know. I just think there's something there to be said that it's not just a dumb clone that's being made. I feel comfortable going, there is art involved here.
Yeah, no, I think that's completely fair. And I think that's a good note to end on.
Yes.
That both of these games took work, they are something unique, and I am glad that both of them exist.
Fantastic, so am I.
So, on the topic of underwhelming games and games set in space, we should talk about our next game, perhaps.
What a setup for Mass Effect 3!
Mass Effect 3 is our next one. I am mind blown that we are still doing Mass Effect games. I want to make it very clear. I suggested the first one.
Yeah.
The reason we've done every other one since is because John insists that the whole trilogy needs to be done on our show.
People have always talked about these games. I've heard so much about them and the arc, and I've always struggled to play them until now. Until this very moment, this very podcast, this is the only way I'm able to play them. So, David, if we don't do Mass Effect 3, I'll never finish it. And then I'll never know why the ending is so unsatisfying. Because apparently that's what their thing is.
Yeah, I have played Mass Effect 3 before. Unlike the other Mass Effect games, I've only finished it once. I've started it 3 or 4 times, but, you know, just kind of burn out because there's not really that much in it.
Oh, exciting.
So I am excited to have an excuse to play through my Renegade run and take a look at how the ending has changed since the vanilla ending, because it was one of the things they punched up in those in that really bad PR reception. They spent a lot of time reworking the ending.
Yeah.
So Mass Effect 3 is our next game. If you like what we do and you want to hear that without having to seek us out manually, I would suggest that you subscribe. You can do so on iTunes. Giving us a review is very, very appreciated. We also have a website called slowpokespodcast.com where you get links to anything that you can subscribe and follow us on, including our Twitter feed at slowpokescast and our Facebook page, facebook.com/slowpokespodcast.
Perfect.
We also have a YouTube channel where we upload our episodes as well, if you are more the kind who wants to go to that website and do it that way.
It's a great place. There's a Let's Play of Until Dawn there, if you're interested in checking that out. Hopefully, we'll be able to put some more stuff up there. But we're looking
I am interested in that kind of thing. Finding time for us to do games together is a little bit harder than finding a little time to record an episode.
Yep.
But playing games is fun. Playing them while someone else is watching is not terrible either.
Yeah.
So, that is our Fortnite for this Fortnite. Thank you for joining us for it. Fuck.
And on that lovely note, I've been John.
I've been David.
Have a wonderful week.